Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all of the shows at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you are not already, you can become a Major Spoilers patron by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, there's darkness in our souls and a cosmic price on our heads, but we have massive capes as we take on Todd McFarlane's Spawn. Plus, a special guest joins the panel to talk turkey, the undead, and super soldiers throughout the years. There's nothing to say. We'll finish the cup. We're offered Moe. We don't mind Shivas, but where we go, we bring the nerdery with us. Brass monkey. No, sorry. I got carried away. We got castles in Brooklyn and several other states, so it's no sleep till Burbank, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 832 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. We have Matthew here, and we have Rodrigo here, and we have Ashley here, and we have special guest, one Jason Inman, who's also in the house this week. Jason, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me and my hell-spawnish nature to join the show.
Well, there's a good reason why we're having you on the show this week, because of your love for Spawn, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But I really love that we are able to have you and Ashley, you know, of Geek History Lesson on our show and doing a mega crossover event, one night only, for this. But also, Jason, you wrote a book, man. And that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, so we could talk that book up, because it is coming out in just a couple of weeks. It's called Super Soldiers, A Salute to the Comic Book Heroes and Villains Who Fought for Their Country. You can get it now over at Amazon. You just look up Jason Inman if you can't remember that long name. But Jason, what is this book about?
This book is really a look at the comic book characters who have also served in the military. And each chapter takes one of these characters and examines them through the lens of their particular service, you know, code of honor, code of conduct, and with a little bit of my true U.S. Army military experience. And then by the end of the chapter, I decide, were they a good service member or were they not a good service member? And what does that mean to their comic book storylines and tales and issues?
So you're looking at heroes like Captain America, Captain Marvel, the Punisher. You're going to be taking a look at in this book?
Nuke. I have a chapter on Nuke.
Matthew's favorite character.
I have a chapter on Nick Fury. Beetle Bailey is in there.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Including some people. One of my favorite characters discovered through research of this book, Gravedigger.
The old Gravedigger stuff in our Army at War in like the 80s.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. So like, yeah, but there's a hodgepodge of different characters. Sadly to say, though, Spawn did not make the cut, but he is in the honorable mention chapter.
Yeah, because he was also a soldier, as we'll get to later in the later in this episode. So I'm curious. And whenever you first said you were talking, I don't know, you talked to me about this, I want to say like 9 months ago, 10 months ago, something like that. You said you were working on a book. This would have been last November or before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's when I was writing it. Yeah.
And you said this is about the comic book military people. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. And that sounds fascinating because, you know, people could always look at, you know, the history of Captain America and the things that he has had to go through and how the military has changed over this time. But then you hooked me when you said, oh, and I'm comparing this to real military and my own personal military experiences and how this stacks up. And instantly I was like, oh man, I want to know more about this book. And it sounds really, really good. So who's someone that we could talk about that you could talk about a little bit from your book to maybe give people a flavor for what they're going to expect when the book arrives?
Well, let's talk about, actually, let's talk about Captain Atom a little bit.
Okay, Captain
Atom.
He's
one that I think people don't realize, Air Force veteran, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people don't really think about him a lot because he sort of has almost a little bit of the same storyline as Captain America. He was part of a military experiment in the 1960s. And when they did that and sort of turned him into a walking version of Dr. Manhattan, he woke up in 1985. He reconstituted his body back in 1985. And when he did that, he met the gentleman who had put him through the experiment, who had now been promoted several ranks. And he found out that his wife and his daughter, who was very young, now called this general dad and husband. So he had lost his family. And he had lost basically his home, his life, his time. And the reason why it's funny, before this book, before the research, I was not a fan of Captain Atom. I kind of thought, you know, oh, look at him. He's aluminum foil Superman. But well, he really is. I mean, I like the design of him. But I always kind of thought he was lame because most DC comic storylines would just shove him in there to eventually show up as a government stooge to tell Superman no, because he kind of could challenge Superman on a power level.
Mm-hmm.
Doing this research and reading his original series, it really connected to me because a lot of his story is about him regaining some semblance of his old life once he gets transported to the future. More so than the fact than Captain America. Like Captain America gets sent to the future and he's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to make this list in Winter Soldier. And once I check those things, I'm okay. And he kind of just gets over it. It's kind of glossed. But Captain Atom constantly struggles with, man, what the hell happened to my life? What the hell happened to my family? How do I get these people back? Is it even right for me to exist in this world? And to me, that's very powerful, especially from a service member's perspective, because every service member that is deployed, myself included, feels like the time that they are overseas, the time they are deployed, is lost time.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like your life goes on pause. And when you come back, you feel like you don't know how you're going to be a part of that world or how you're going to be a part of that system and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to ask because, you know, Captain Atom's coming out in what, Matthew, 1960?
Well, the Nathaniel Atom version came out in 87. Mm-hmm. That's the one that they're referring to. The previous version, the Charlton version, had some differences in storytelling.
You have your own personal experiences, but are you also making comparisons about how literally people were coming back from Vietnam and still, you know, 10 years later are still struggling to find where they belong in the world?
Yeah. And I get into pieces of that a lot in the Punisher chapter.
Okay.
Because he's the Vietnam veteran and mm-hmm. things like that. But the point I was making with the Captain Atom thing is more of the idea that and it's funny, I didn't even tell Ashley this. I haven't told very many. There's a lot of stuff in this book that I've never told anybody. And when Ashley was the first beta reader of this book, I put the story in there, specifically in the Captain Atom chapter, about how when I came back from Iraq, the first time I got in a car, and I think I went to like a subway, I was kind of weirded out to drive to a subway.
Oh.
It was weird for me to just drive down a normal street and not be in an armored car, not be wearing armor, not have a weapon. And the United States, weird small town Kansas, felt like an alien world to me. So in that deployed world.
Yeah. We take your service for granted. We take a lot of service members' service for granted. We just don't think about those little things. And I think that's something I hadn't even considered is something just like that, how it could have a big impact and how that you could use that in a comic book character and talk about those kinds of things. Did you find when you were doing this research, some people really got the military aspects right and other people were just like, oh, this is just so off the mark. It's sad.
Yes, several times. So the Nuke chapter, and mm-hmm. Nuke is, as we know, Matthew Peterson's favorite character.
Yep.
I'm writing this down, you guys. There's going to come a reckoning.
I read the first draft of the Nuke chapter. We're several drafts from it now. So much of the hatred has been cut out of that chapter. Jason went off on a tear where he just wrote about Captain America again because he didn't enjoy writing about Nuke.
Yeah, like Nuke's so problematic. And there's a point in that storyline where he's not really a real character. It's just all of Frank Miller's anger about what he thinks a Vietnam vet is, mm-hmm. and what he thinks America has done to the military. And there's some parts of that storyline where it becomes cartoonish. Like there is a scene where Nuke tries to order, he tries to order a beer on a plane during Daredevil Born Again. And he says like, it has to be American. And it's so beyond ludicrous. But I would say that actually in most comic books it's about 50-50, and it's very obvious. It's hard to point out what is the point of authenticity, right. I guess when it goes beyond cliche, like when it goes beyond that the soldiers, the military characters are just like hoorah, yes sir, buy war bonds, when it goes beyond that, you could tell that this person has done some research, which is a point that I bring up in my very first chapter, which is about Captain America, that Captain America is not a real soldier until about the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's treated as a soldier throughout most of the, you know, the primary Marvel universe in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. He's kind of just, I call him in the book, a walking, talking American flag. He's not really a person. And that, reading some of those old tales, I was actually kind of really bothered by that, because if you think any character would get it right, it'd be Captain America. So that was very interesting to see that it's not until the modern day that Captain America has actually become a really rounded human being. But the biggest thing I've noticed in a lot of my research is that everybody wants to call basic training boot camp. And it hasn't been called boot camp for 20 years, 30 years.
What was it called when you went through?
Basic training.
Okay.
It's actually, yeah.
I don't know if it's called induction or what it's called these days. So
I think it stopped being called boot camp around like just post the Vietnam War. Although now fitness camps are called boot camp, which is why it bothers me.
I was going to say, yeah, now when you hear boot camp, it's like, oh, cute. You're going to go do CrossFit. Have fun. Yep.
Let's just say I was reading some DC Rebirth Batwoman issues and they kept going, Kate, how was your boot camp? And I was like, oh, God.
I got the seal at Army, mother.
Yeah. The other one, actually, I discovered this, and this is something actually I didn't know because I was in the Army. So each different branch of the military has a different name. You don't call everybody soldiers. Now, I know my book is called Super Soldiers, but we like the alliteration, so we went to it. But
sure,
you actually call service members is what you call, because people in the Army are soldiers. Mm-hmm. People in the Navy are sailors. Marines are Marines. And if you're in the Air Force, you're airmen. And I discovered a lot of John Stewart stories where they retconned him to be a Marine. And there's a lot of issues in Blackest Night where Hal Jordan says, come on, soldier, to John Stewart. Mm. John Stewart was a Marine. And also, that's weird that Hal Jordan says that because he was in the Air Force.
Right. But yes. I mean, so that could be bad writing. But is that also Hal Jordan being a jerk? Airmen and just trying to demean the Marine.
Yeah, obviously, I don't know the intention. So, yeah, maybe that is Hal Jordan being a jerk. But, you know, there's one point where John Stewart specifically says, like, oh, I'm no longer a good soldier. And it'd be like, that's weird. I don't think a Marine would think of himself that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That I believe also comes up in Captain Marvel's chapter as well.
Yeah, you said you're exploring both Marvel and DC. You've got Beetle Bailey in there, which I think is going to be a very interesting chapter to read just because, wow, Beetle Bailey, man.
I've said this in a couple other places, too, that the weird thing that nobody realizes is that secretly every service member is Beetle Bailey. It's true.
Tell me that Beetle Bailey is weirdly accurate in a very old school kind of way.
He is. He is so weirdly accurate because Beetle Bailey, it's funny, and you can read this because Mort Walker, is it Mort Walker, Matthew?
Yeah.
Okay. Mort Walker was a veteran too. And all of his stories of Beetle Bailey are supposedly, he didn't get called overseas or anything like that, but supposedly Beetle Bailey comes from when he had to, when he was served for like 2 years, and it comes from the bad army base that he served on. And I tried to find some research. I found it where he didn't say like what the army base was because he didn't want to insult them.
Crowder, Camp Crowder.
Yeah. Okay. So
Fort Crowder, actually, in Missouri.
If you look at Beetle Bailey, that's every service member, because we all don't kind of want to be there and we all kind of don't want to do our jobs. So like Beetle Bailey is the exaggeration of that, where we just want to take a nap. Like we don't want to go dig the trenches, Sarge. We want to take a nap. Like, I don't want to peel potatoes, Sarge. I want to take a nap. So like it's that kind of aspect of it. Like, whereas Captain America is the like charge the hill, do the thing. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Beetle Bailey is the opposite reaction to that. Like, yeah. So it's true. Every service member at one point in their career is Captain America and Beetle Bailey at the same time.
Do you have any, I don't know if you were doing this in your research, but did you ever, maybe your book talks about it, maybe not, but did you ever go in and just think about why are so many comic book heroes, former or current military members? Because isn't John Steele, isn't he? Isn't he also, or John Henry Irons? Isn't he also military, or he worked for military?
He worked for military.
Okay.
I think Commander Steele, the original Commander Steele, was
mm-hmm.
in the military.
Yeah, he was. Oh gosh, OSS is the thing that pops into my head, and I think that's right. But yeah, Steele came around in like 77 or 78, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
But no, I do talk about that actually in quite a bit of the chapters, because it is this weird secret connection that comic books and the military has. My only guess to that is that, and I think it's become more prevalent now because of the war on terror and the war in Iraq, because we're at a point now in America where we almost have more veterans now than we've ever had. Like we're like, the official number I found was that we now currently have somewhere over 7.1 million veterans. And this was a number from 2016.
Wow.
It's the most accurate number I could find. We have like 7.1 million veterans right now in America. And that is one of the highest levels that America has ever had. So I kind of feel like it is becoming this subsection of culture. I kind of feel because of the war on terror, we maybe all know somebody that has served now,
mm-hmm.
Or we're friend of a friend, or we work with somebody. So I think in culture and pop culture that the reason that has become more prevalent is because it's an easy shorthand. Because if you say that somebody is in the military, most people generally would be like, okay, that person can fight, that person can mm-hmm. fire a weapon,
mm-hmm.
and that person is either super honorable, depending on how you play the character, or a bad guy. Like it's the extremes. They're either really mm-hmm. good or really bad. And I think that's the reason why. Also, they're both vocations where you kind of have to step up to a higher calling to mm-hmm. do it.
Right.
Whether you're going to sign on that dotted line or whether you're going to, you know, put on tights and jump down into dirty alleyways.
Right.
Well, I think a lot of people. Oh, go ahead.
John Stewart is a fascinating example of what you're talking about, Jason, because he was not a Marine, or he was not even, referenced as having a military background until the Justice League cartoon did it in like 2001. And it's actually become part of his history since that point. And it's, you know, at this point, it's one of the formative, you know, the cornerstones of John Stewart's modern characterization. But for, you know, like 35 years, that was not part of John's stuff at all. And it's interesting to me that, you know, 2001 is a point where all of a sudden, you know, war becomes a real thing. It's something that people are dealing with, that young people are dealing with every single day. And all of a sudden, well, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, but gradually that has, you know, become one of John Stewart's core characterizations, whereas previously it wasn't ever referenced.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. That is basically the crux of my John Stewart chapter.
Whoops, sorry.
Oh, it's all good. No, it's all good. I love you're so on top of it, man. I love it. A lot of that chapter, I examine some of John Stewart's situations and then go through, well, how would have Architect John have dealt with this? And how would Marine John have dealt with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I talk a lot that the reason, I think you're very correct, that show was in like 2001, 9/11 hits. I think it makes sense in the development of that show that they make him a Marine. But also, I examine kind of the animated Justice League's characteristics. And if you look at the characters they choose for the animated Justice League. And especially, again, they're trying to do a shorthand to kids to sell that they are a team. Making John Stewart the military person, because the rest of the team for the animated cartoon are sort of a bunch of people, a bunch of rebels who won't listen to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, very true.
And then if you create one of the characters as a military person, then you get the straight and narrow guy. The guy is like, hey, we got to be on mission, guys. We got to do this. Here's a bubble. And there even is an episode where John Stewart trains them
right.
in military tactics.
Right.
Yep.
I wonder, in your research, is there a branch of the military that is underrepresented in the superhero in comic books? Or is there a branch of the military that is misrepresented in comics more than any other?
That's an excellent question. I think
it's got to be the Coast Guard, right? You don't see a lot of Coast Guard superheroes.
Well, you know, Popeye was in the Coast Guard.
Oh, well, there you go.
And there's one G.I. Joe. His name is Cutter. And his real name is Skip A. Stone. And he is a Coast Guard guy. He's the pilot of the Whale. This is all true, folks. I am not making this up. I'm going to shut up now because Jason had an answer to that cool question.
I think Coast Guard is correct. I never discovered one character in the Coast Guard.
Well, you should have called me, man.
Oh, man. I wish.
Well, Jason, it's now you'll just have to create one.
Yeah,
well,
it's the second Guard. The second
they
volume.
Be under rep too.
Look, I'm going to say this. Matthew, you are in the acknowledgments of this book, because when I started writing this, I emailed you and said, like, hey, just in case there's a weird character out there that I don't know, shoot me some ideas. And you did.
Yeah, I remember that,
which I really appreciated. Yeah.
Did you use my Todd Holton Super Green Beret idea? Because
I did not, but
that's a comic that exists.
I will say because of you, Matthew, there is a mention of Skate Man in this book.
Yes. My immortality
The amazing thing is that now there are two books that mention Skate Man. Jason's book and Skate Man.
I like reading some of these pull quotes from people, from reviews. Of course, there's some people that we know, Tom Merritt, a good friend of the show. Dan Juergens is there. We've got Ryan Sands, also a big friend of the show. But then you got Dan Aykroyd to review your book,
You're
Jason.
Welcome.
This is actually a story that Ashley should tell, because she's the main reason that I was able to get Dan Aykroyd to actually read my book.
Well, I was doing, I guess this has been announced. I think I talked about other Major Spoilers podcasts already. I was at Sony a couple months ago to do, for the 35th anniversary of the Ghostbusters movie release on Blu-ray. They did a fan commentary, and I got invited to be a part of that, which is amazing. So right. If you get that new Blu-ray, you can listen to my commentary. And I know Dan Aykroyd is a big fan of Men in Uniform. That's a reason why in the Ghostbusters movies, you'll see a lot of, not soldiers so much, but you see a lot of cops, you see a lot of EMTs, you see a lot of firefighters. And so I happened across him and I told him about the book. And we have a good friend who works at Ghost Corps. Shout out to Victoria Male. So then Jason connected with her, who connected him with Dan, who read the book, who gave you a humongous quote, a very, very intelligent quote.
Yeah, he actually, like, the sentence that's on the cover is, like, only, like, one quarter of the full quote. He wrote me, like, an essay on my book, which I was like, whoa, thank you, Mr. Aykroyd.
That is great. Now, I know all of our listeners are ready to go buy this book right now. Tell us when it comes out and where they can get it.
It comes out June 18th. It's available right now for pre-order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Apple Books, or your local bookstore. I also know comic book shops can order it because I am doing a signing at Earth 2 the week that it comes out. So comic book shop, if you go to your comic book shop, you can ask them to order it. They can order it that way as well. And pre-orders, like in comic books, are for books are super important. So please, if you're interested in the book, order it before June 18th so that Amazon algorithm hits June 18th and blows the book up crazy. And I will say this, if you pre-order the book and you email me a screenshot of your receipt at jasoninmanauthor@gmail.com, I'll let you read the first three chapters for free.
There you go.
And I have an exclusive video that talks about my writing process for it that you'll only get to see if you pre-order the book.
Very cool. So people just need to email you. Drop that email again.
JasonInmanAuthor@gmail.com. Exactly how my name is spelled.
So I can just take a screenshot of this Amazon page where I pre-ordered this book on April 2nd of 2019, and that will qualify me?
100%.
All right. I also noticed this is on audiobook, too.
Yes.
A lot of us have been talking. Now, there's, I'll make an announcement here in just a little bit, but a lot of us have been talking in a certain book reading channel about audiobooks lately, and I see that this is also an audiobook, so now you're going to get two purchases from me on this. Ooh. So who is doing the audio on this? Is this you doing the audio?
No, sadly, I did not get to do the audiobook. It was a thing of scheduling. And mm-hmm. that my publishing company wanted the audiobook to release the same day that the book came out. So mm-hmm. I unfortunately couldn't book a studio in Los Angeles and record it in, to make it in time. But I wanted to. I really okay. wanted to.
Well, now
I'm not certain who it is. I know it's a guy that does a lot of audiobooks. So hopefully he pronounces the words much better than I ever could.
I've got to buy the audiobook version, too, because that's how I read all of my books lately.
That's so awesome. I've actually been thinking about buying the audiobook myself just to hear how somebody else reads in my voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Greg Sipes doing an impersonation of Leonard Nimoy. Yeah.
So cool. Listeners, go check out this book, Super Soldiers, A Salute to the Comic Book Heroes and Villains Who Fought for Their Country. Jason Inman, it's coming out in a couple of weeks. Go pre-order it now because Jason's not fooling. If you go and pre-order it, it will do so much for the rankings. This is the same thing that happened when Rodrigo's book was released, Tale of Tallest Rabbit. We were able to get that higher in the children's section for Rodrigo's book, and we can do that with Jason's book as well. It looks like currently it is sitting number 3 in the comics and graphic novels section, number 5 in the comics and graphic novels Kindle store, number 30 in the pop culture in graphic design category, and you are in the top 150,000 of the regular Kindle store. So you can go get it there. You can also get it in paperback if you want that. So Kindle, audiobook, Audible, and paperback if you want it to get it there. And oh, Jason, you're in the top 50,000 in regular books. So
I'll take it.
Listeners,
yeah. I'll take it. That was the only goal.
Let's get a few more in there. Let's see if we can get it into the top 25,000. How about that? It'd be great to see it in the top 100 when
That'd
that comes
awesome.
Out.
I'll have to come back and buy you guys all pizza.
Oh, man. I had a, speaking of pizzas, I think coming up this week on top five, yeah. I think this week we have a top five pizza toppings. Top five pizza toppings, I think, is the episode that we released this week on the Major Spoilers Podcast one. Network.
It is. It got really deep. It was weird.
Yeah. But
deep dish?
No, deep dish sucks.
I knew somebody would pick it up. I'm glad you did.
Yes, and sir. Yes, and.
So, listeners, I've mentioned Patreon at the top of the show. We have a very long discussion with Jason about what he's doing currently in his real world job when he's not writing books or doing YouTube videos. He's working for a television show, and we spent about, I don't know, a good 20, 30 minutes chatting with him about the process of working in a writer's room and what the writer's room does. If you are a patron at the $5 and higher level, you can listen to that conversation right now. What are you waiting for? I found it very in-depth. We talk about some of the other current things that are going on with the Writers Guild and a whole lot more. You can find that at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let's see. The other reason why we have Jason on the show this week is Jason is a huge Spawn fan.
It's pronounced spoon.
No, that's something else. Jason, when did you fall in love with Spawn? Oh, I think we lost Jason.
I'm back. You just cut out right as you asked that question.
Oh, I said, when did you first fall in love with the Spawn?
You know, my first Spawn issue actually was Spawn number 50.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, I wasn't reading comic books when Spawn first came out, which was 92, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
93.
93. Yeah. So I didn't actually like hardcore get into comic books until like 96, 95, somewhere in there.
You're right. It was 92. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I remember seeing the issue 50 cover come out because one of the variants was like Spawn sitting on top of the issue 50 cover. And I was like, what is this? Who is this guy with the big red cape? He sort of looks like Spider-Man, but he's not Spider-Man. And then weirdly at that time, they also had the Spawn action figures.
Mm-hmm, which with the foldable cape, better. Which I hated.
Yeah. They looked better than any other action figures at the time. So like I was sort of in on Spawn just off the look. That's how I got into Spawn.
Now, did you see the Spawn movie in 97?
I have a hilarious story about that.
Okay.
So my parents, you know, they're not super religious, but they were like, we're not going to take you to the Spawn movie.
Oh, so parents.
The church we were going to did this annual trip to the Kansas City Royals. And you'd be the thing where we'd go up to Kansas City. We'd get to spend like 4 to 5 hours in the mall and then go to the Kansas City Royals game at night. I got a friend to go with me. And instead of going to the mall, we went to the local movie theater and saw Spawn. Oh. So I saw Spawn on a church trip.
Wow. You are going to burn for that.
I hope so, because that movie was terrible.
Rodrigo, you've seen this movie, right? Did you see it when it came out originally? Or was this another one that your parents wouldn't let you go to it because it was devil stuff?
No. I mean, my parents wouldn't have objected to it on it being devil stuff. They would have objected to it because going to the theater is very expensive.
Oh, right.
I did get a chance to see Spawn when it came out.
And was this your introduction to John Leguizamo, or had you known of him before?
No, I knew John Leguizamo before. I want to say The Pest was before Spawn.
Mm, okay.
But I had seen him around before. John Leguizamo was actually kind of starting to get big in the 90s. So, yeah, I knew him before, and he'd done stuff in Spanish, too. So, I mean, it was like, you know, I had seen Michael J. White around as well, because he is a like bodybuilder and martial artist, so he plays a mm-hmm. lot of bad guys mm-hmm. in like other movies. When Spawn was coming out, I knew what Spawn was. I knew John Leguizamo, and I knew Michael J. White.
Yeah,
he did House of Buggin the year or two before Spawn.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So I definitely saw him on House of Buggin.
I will let people know that if you are listening to Critical Hit, another show that we do, where we are playing the fiasco game, I picture the non-crazy insane John Leguizamo in a fat suit as Rodrigo's character. That's who I would cast for that character.
As my character?
As your character in the fiasco game.
Sure. I can see that.
Yeah.
That would not be inappropriate.
Now, Matthew, Ashley, when did you first discover Spawn?
Oh, that's okay. I just said I'm trying to avoid talking about Spawn.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I understand that. I am kind of in that same camp as you are, although Matthew and I are old enough to remember when Spawn first debuted, when McFarlane and Lee and everybody broke away from the Marvel and went over and started their own company. And one of the first offerings was the Spawn. And I got to say, the covers, beautiful stuff, right? I mean, I bet Spawn graced every issue of Wizard magazine for like 3 years straight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all the Image books were just all over Wizard. But the thing about it is the covers are really fascinating to look at. And in retrospect, you can see things about McFarlane's art style that were not as obvious in 1992. Like that number one cover.
Right.
If you actually look at that in an abstract form, that's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that and you're like, how is his body even bending? Your brain will explode. There's no sense in that.
Well, we'll get to the comics in just a little bit. We'll get to the comics in just a little bit. But so Spawn, Jason discovered Spawn with issue 50. Matthew and I in 92. Rodrigo, around that time, Ashley avoids it like the plague.
This is the first time I've ever read Spawn.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, this will be very interesting to get your take on this then.
I was a baby child when the TV show was out.
Mm.
And I thought, boy, that looks fun. That looks like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was very scary. And then I never read Spawn until Steven said we had to.
Well, you know, there's a new Spawn movie coming up. I thought it was supposed
Jason
to come out.
Made me watch the first Spawn movie.
Oh yeah, what'd you think of that?
Yeah,
that's one movie that I avoided.
I don't want to be kind about it.
Martin Sheen's in it.
Yeah, President Bartlett's in it. Who's Spawn? Michael J. White?
Michael J. White.
He's, you know, he's a treat. And I really hope that he's the new Felicity on Arrow. And I'll say this about the Spawn movie. They're all trying really hard. And I think if they had made the movie even 5 years later, I think it would have turned out very differently.
When did Blade come out? Do you guys remember when the Blade movie came out?
99.
So this was even before Blade.
Yeah.
And I guess people are still trying to figure out. I mean, Batman was huge. Batman Returns.
Spawn was massive in 1993, 94, 95.
Yeah.
Spawn was huge.
It was a big deal.
A massive seller.
Yeah. But the movie, not so much, though. And that's what I'm trying to figure out is Hollywood somehow couldn't figure out how to tell that story in movie form. They knew that they had $1 million. You know, they knew that they had a winner here. But for some reason, I don't think they could just pull that off.
I don't think it's so much about telling that story. Is that the visuals for the movie weren't there yet,
mm-hmm, especially with the cape and everything.
Spawn is a very difficult character to actualize on screen. He's got a magic cape. He's got magic chains. His armor is like alive sometimes, and also underneath, he looks like a burn victim. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of special effects and makeup that have to go into Spawn, and man, did this movie try. It just they just went all out as much as they could. They even gave us the cape for about 10 seconds before mm-hmm. it retracted back into his body mm-hmm. and was never seen again.
Well, that was all CGI stuff back at the time. I remember trying to do the cloth simulations was incredibly hard. Right. They did try, but at some point, Todd McFarlane is like, you know what? It's time to do a new Spawn movie, and I'm going to direct it, and I'm going to write it, and it's going to come out. I thought it was supposed to come out this year, but I guess not. And I'm curious, what's going on with this movie? Anybody know what's going on with this movie?
I mean, what's going on is that Todd McFarlane is going to keep talking about it every 2 to 3 months to keep it in the press so that the rights and the excitement for the Spawn movie keeps up.
It's all about the buzz.
Yeah, it's the buzz that keeps rising because I honestly think this movie's never going to happen.
Yeah, I was, this was announced, in 2017, I think, is when it was announced. And it was like, oh, yeah, coming out in 2019. I was like, oh, that's really quick. I wonder who's going to play the title character. Are they going to have the main villains in there? What's going on? And ever since then, I hear nothing about this. And now I guess this came out just 2 weeks ago. Todd McFarlane threatens to walk away if he has to change his script too much. And I thought he was fully in control of this. He had complete control and was going for the hard R on this. And now you're right, Jason. Maybe this movie isn't ever going to get made.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Todd has been for 30 years the driving creative force of Spawn. And I get the feeling that he always has a finger, even when he's not writing the book, he always has a finger in what can and can't happen and the things that, happen in and around the character's universe. And after 25 years, you have to ask yourself, does he have a point? I mean, does he actually have the cachet to say, look, it's my way or the highway. I'm the brains behind this. I've been, shepherding this for longer than some of you people have been alive.
Yeah.
But then you also have to ask yourself, how many times do we hear these stories of, a writer or a director or somebody stomping their foot down and saying, I'm not going to put it together till it's perfect. And 35 years later, we're still talking about Harlan Ellison's The Last Dangerous Visions and wishing that it had actually gotten done.
Here's the actual quote. The money's sitting on the sidelines ready to go. I just need to get everyone that wants to put in money to shake their heads to the same script. As you can imagine, everyone has slightly different versions of it in their head. You just go and trying to appease a handful of people while not giving in to what it is that I'm trying to do myself. Because if I have to change too much of it, I'm just going to walk away from it all. So.
Yep. Chinese democracy.
here's the thing about Todd McFarlane. Todd McFarlane has made millions upon millions of dollars with Spawn, the movie, the comic books, the toys. Probably the toys is where he's made most of his money.
Oh, yeah.
He has enough money to do like M. Night Shyamalan did with Split and Glass and fund this movie himself.
Right.
So I'm actually quite surprised that he hasn't just done that already. You could make a decent and scary and entertaining Spawn movie for $5 million. It could work.
Well, he's got Jamie Foxx and Jeremy Renner both attached to play in this movie. Jamie Foxx, of course, to play Spawn, and Jeremy Renner to play Twitch.
I mean, Jeremy Renner to play Spawn would have really been a bold choice.
Whoa. Although, well, as that, we'll see in this volume,
yeah, there's a point where he's like,
play Spawn.
I'm a white guy.
They go for the I am a white person now.
Quite recently asking Jason, I was like, Spawn's supposed to be black, right? And he was like, well, sometimes.
That was actually one of their big twists. I remember an Image magazine thing where they're like, yeah, but he's trapped as a white guy, you guys. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you're like, well, Todd McFarlane is not a black person, but he's writing a black character. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what's he doing with it? Is this just like window dressing? But definitely the moment where Spawn turns into a white guy and he's like, no, this is wrong. I'm like, yeah, all right, I can see that. It's like, at least he's got this right. It would be a huge shock for, you know, a black man to all of a sudden look at himself and be a white guy.
Yeah. Well, we are officially transitioning over into the Spawn Origins Volume 1. Mm-hmm. By McFarlane and Greg Capullo. And the 300th issue of Spawn is scheduled to hit like in August, I want to say, if not before. And these two are reuniting for that 300th issue. So I know a lot of people are very excited about that. I remember when Spawn first hit the shelves, I was like, yeah, this guy looks like Batman, or at least has this dark visions of Batman. But I also see Spider-Man and Dr. Fate and Daredevil. It all wrapped up into this one character. So if those are the characters you like, all wrapped into one, I think Spawn is the character you should be pointing your comic book dollars to.
Well, sure. You know, they went to the trouble of hiring the newscasters from The Dark Knight Returns, too. So that was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you talk about really the 80s, you know, late 70s and through the 80s being that time when the kids who were reading comics really became comic book writers, mm-hmm. right? And you see some of them wear their influence on their sleeves, some of them hide it a little better, or they have broader influences. But, you know, it's pretty clear that Todd McFarlane here is like a comic book guy. Like, Spawn is very referential to a lot of comics, like you said, to Batman, to Daredevil, to Spider-Man, and is just kind of picking and plucking from all kinds of stuff, definitely from like the Vertigo-y DC stuff, for all the Hex stuff, definitely from like stuff like The Dark Knight Returns for the format of it in a lot of ways, right. and of course from Watchmen in the Walls of Text.
So
there really are a lot of monologues in this.
Yeah. So Jason, give us a little background on who is Al Simmons and how did he wind up in this situation?
Well, Al Simmons is a CIA officer / Marine / Black Ops / CIA Black Ops / guy they don't really tell you from a secret society military organization that they never really explain, who goes on a mission and is killed on this mission by either his best friend Chapel or this girl named Jessica or some other character that Todd McFarlane decides when he decides to retcon it. It's never entirely sure. He goes to hell where he makes a deal with the devil, not really the devil, actually Malbogia, actually somebody else, actually maybe Malbogia again, who sends him back to Earth and sends him on Earth 5 years later when his wife, of course, has remarried, and his wife now has a kid. And the ultimate joke of that is that because you eventually learned that Al Simmons was, I don't know the correct word, he couldn't have babies.
Mm.
Oh, sterile.
Sterile, there
impotent?
You go. Yeah, no, not impotent. So that's who Al Simmons is. He's a very, very, he's sort of, I would say, modern day Punisher mixed with devil, mm-hmm. Satan.
Yeah. And Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, yeah. And Daredevil.
It's funny, staying to some of your points, and the reason why I was making all those jokes through the origin is because Todd McFarlane has retconned Spawn So many times.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it makes sense, though, in this story, right, Matthew? Because part of the hook is that Simmons can't remember anything, and he just has these flashes. So maybe he remembers his wife this way. Maybe he remembers he had a kid. Maybe it was the devil that he had an agreement with. So maybe it does kind of work that way, no?
I think that it works that way in the same way that when the cat falls off of the top of the television set, he gets up and walks away and goes, I meant to do that. That's exactly how I wanted that to look. I feel like these first few issues have a lot of seat of their pants stuff thrown in. Like Sam and Twitch are suddenly here and we're like, okay, what's, oh, okay. I kind of get the feeling. Later on, we find out that Sam and Twitch are, you know, much more important and much deeper than what we see here. And the, you know, the references to Al's life beforehand are left vague. I don't think because it's, you know, intentional so much as we haven't figured that out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works to the story's advantage when we see, you know, we have that big moment where he's all of a sudden, oh my God, her name was Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
And then the devil shows up and he's like, hey, you want a golden fiddle? But it doesn't necessarily feel like it's something that at the beginning of issue one, they knew where we'd be at issue 50 or issue 100 or even at the end of issue one. It very much feels like seat of the pants storytelling. And then sort of agglomerating enough barnacles that you can build into a little house on the beach.
So anyone can jump in on this. But do you think that is because when this group was over at Marvel or DC or wherever that they were at before, that they had a good group of editors that were keeping them in check and double checking their stories and making sure that the stories that they were producing for those publishers were the best that it can be? And then when they left, they didn't have that kind of oversight and they were just, people were throwing money at them left and right and expecting to crank out a book? Or is there something else behind that? I don't know. I've not looked up who the editors were at Image at this time.
There were no editors at Image at this time.
Yeah. I kind of think you nailed it, Stephen, because what's very evident from Spawn in the very first five issues, and it's the thing that drew me to Spawn, is that you can tell that Todd McFarlane cares more for the look of the book than he does what is actually happening in the book.
Which I think is a fair criticism, but it's also a fair criticism to lob at all of the OG Image books that were coming out. Like, this is not the only one that was operating.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
Let's not even get Wildcats or whoever, Youngblood.
Who didn't enjoy this. I do think that's a fair criticism to sort of launch at Image in general.
Okay,
but
so
I will say,
go ahead.
But I was going to say, like, for Spawn, that I think to me is that even looking at this book now, these issues that were coming out in 1992, the panel composition and some of the ways the pages are laid out, like the art, especially the art looks to me like it's a little dated, but it still looks dynamic and it's not boring to look at now. So I can imagine that in 1992, if you picked up this book off the stand, you're probably like, what the hell is this?
This was the only reason, Greg Capullo was the only reason why I bought Spawn for the first, I don't know, 10, 12 issues or something like that. Because I would look at this art and just go, wow, this is not like anything that is currently going on in other books, except for Batman. But also, this was printed on a different paper. This was printed on much bolder inks, much shinier paper, and the colors popped in your face. And this was something that was like, ooh, this is cool looking.
Yeah. None of these issues feature Capullo art, by the way. It's
all
they Todd
don't. This is all Todd. Okay.
This is all Todd.
Well, then it's all Todd's art that I'm looking at, that I'm looking at and just being jaw dropping on this.
Yeah, Capullo was a stronger artist, but Stephen is exactly right, because at the time that Spawn came out, it was on glossy paper with heavy-duty coloring, and you look at some of these oranges and the greens and the deep, deep...
Oh, the glowy
kind of
stuff that's going on? Yeah.
You get effects here. Traditional four-color books in 1991, 92 were still very much that. You didn't get those bright poison greens of Spawn's blast powers, and you didn't get the effects of the bright red blood, although part of that is because blood wasn't going to be red in the comics, but the coloring is much more vivid and much more violent. And yes, I just referred to the coloring as violent. And if you've read these comics, you know why.
It's kind of amazing if you've read more recent issues of Spawn to go back to these and be like, to look at them and see how colorful they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually, as with everything else, you know, Spawn would go through a period where everything was brown, you know, because brown is real. To go back and look at these, like, issues from the 90s and see that there's like a lot of greens and oranges and just bright reds and all this stuff, it's actually kind of amazing to go back and see that when Spawn got started, mm-hmm. it was like reading a fruit salad.
And again, yeah. I think there were some new printing processes going on and to make these glossy pages look as good they were, but also there was so much hype that I remember, and again, it's been forever, and this was and I'll say this, Spawn to me is a lesser character. Sorry, Jason.
I agree with you on that, actually.
This is not That's something fine. that was a character that I would remember for a long time, but I do remember when I was joking earlier about Wizard Magazine featuring Spawn like on every third cover, or at one point Wizard Magazine had posters on the inside that you could tear out and hang up. That I remember Spawn and McFarlane art being featured prominently even before the first issue arrived. Am I missing something on that, Matthew, or do you remember also seeing a lot of pre-hype for Spawn ahead of the release?
Oh, yeah. Image and Wizard basically went hand in hand for about the first 2-3 years. It was all about the Image. And the fascinating thing, if you go back and you actually... God help me, I just moved these issues a couple of weeks ago, and I know I still have them. Those old Wizard books are prepping things and telling us about things that didn't come around for sometimes a year or more mm-hmm. because of the wonky scheduling of early Image comics.
Well, it's just...
Honestly, again, because of McFarlane's writing, too. It's kind of roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was going to ask if you still had the original Wizards. I'm about to clean out my Nerd Room of Doom, and I'm pretty sure I know which long box has a huge collection of Wizard magazines in it.
I don't have a complete run, but I have about the first 50 issues somewhere, and I'm probably gonna sell them.
You think people are interested in old Wizards
magazine? Because it meant I would spend half as much money. And just read about what was happening in comics instead
That's
of having
why I did
to
it
buy
too.
Comics.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, Wizard Magazine is, you know, the major spoilers of the day, right? I mean, it was the site that would tell you what was coming out and what was hot and had the cool art and had the price guide and everything in there.
And say what you want about it. I always felt that it gave everyone a fair shake. It would have been mm-hmm. very easy for it to be like a big DC Marvel thing, but... It gave Image a fair shake. It gave Dark Horse a fair yep. shake. You would see a lot yeah. of indies.
Yeah, there was Valiant, I know, was featured in there quite a bit. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They were super into, what's that comic with like the cartoon characters and the sexy lady? I would see that
Beetle
stuff
Bailey?
All the time. No, it's
Bone. Bone?
Well, no. Bone, yes. But
Drawn together.
Roger no. Rabbit? Okay, that's what good, did the sexy lady guess. Look like?
Cool World?
She has dark hair.
Uh-huh.
Archie?
Oh, Liberty Meadows.
That's the one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Frank Cho.
Yeah! I love me some Liberty Meadows. That book has okay. not held up at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, Ashley.
Hey, I'm right here, dude.
This is... I agree with you. I didn't care for this book.
I mean, I didn't care for it. I knew going into it I was not going to care for it. There is a very specific audience that this book will be enjoyed by.
Teenage boys.
Yeah, 14-year-old boys. Or people who can read a comic and appreciate it strictly for the art. For me, and it's because I'm a writer and I spend too much time talking about story. I can't, it's tough for me to read something just for the art. It's almost impossible.
I had that same problem. I couldn't read yeah. this. I was just looking at the art and going, okay, I can tell what's going on visually. I don't need to read wall of text.
Oh, truly, I should have got the Russian version of it because I can't read Cyrillic alphabet. So I probably would have had a better experience. And I don't actually think this is, I don't think there's no value in this book. I just didn't enjoy it. And I'm loath to come across too hard on it because it remains popular for a reason. I have a lot of respect for this book and the fact that it is still being published.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do think it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So like there are things I like. I just don't like the whole composite picture, really.
Yeah.
Spawn was just announced as a DLC character for Mortal Kombat 11.
Right.
And people are excited. It's news.
I was kind of excited.
I mean,
by
Spawn
it.
Is, yeah. When you think about the character, a man who's come from back from hell, you know, he's working for the devil, but he's trying to break away and he's, you know, killing the bad guys and he's trying to reclaim his life. I mean, that is a really interesting story right there. The look of Spawn is super cool. I mean, the cape and the chains and the Spider-Man mask is like really, really cool. The time when Batman threw the boomerang, the batarang and split his head open and he had to sew it up. And that carried over into the Spawn comics for a year. That stuff was really, really good. I know in the Image comics,
it was actually Houdini who did it.
Yeah, it was a different thing, but in the Batman Spawn crossover, it was Batman who did it. So the look of Spawn and the idea of Spawn is really, really good, but this is just, for me, really hard to read.
Part of that comes from, and this is not in any means meant to be an indictment of early Image, but I think that it's going to sound like it because there's more truth than just Todd's actions in this. But Todd McFarlane specifically gave interviews that said writers are not important to comics. As an artist, he contributed everything important to comics, and he didn't need a writer, and a writer was completely unnecessary for the success of Spawn. There's actually, years and years ago, there's a big debate where he and a high-profile writer of the time go toe-to-toe at a convention, and they both come off as douches, but the basic crux of the argument was, do comics need writers? And coming out of these six issues, I can tell you that unequivocally, the answer is yup.
Yeah.
But more importantly, comics do need editors. And that, I think, is the biggest problem with this book, because I did read all the words. And
yes,
I got to tell you.
Queen, preach. Editors are unsung.
I got to tell you that the thing about reading all the words means that this is the way my mind works, friends. And you're going to say to me, no, 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 it'll be fine in a couple of days. It won't be fine in a couple of days. This isn't going away. Lines like, your friend is dead. It's just you and me, coward. Now I want to know who's after me. And more importantly, why? Why? You know what I mean?
I'm a white guy.
That is literally. There comes a point when you are a writer artist where you're kind of balancing things and you've drawn a picture. Say you have a picture of Spawn in midair going, "Arrgh!" and he looks really cool. And he looks like Spider-Man only wrapped up in a tent. And he's saying something. And the amount of dialogue that he is saying takes a good 45 to 60 seconds to read aloud in your head. And you're like, how is he hanging there for that long? And then you have to remember he has, you know, devil powers.
He's got devil powers, the power of right. Satan.
Had this book stayed with the same Todd McFarlane writer slash artist. You know, he's a threefer. He's a writer slash artist slash guy with really good hair who owns Madonna's bustier. That's not a joke. That's true.
Does he still have hair?
Yeah. Todd McFarlane. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Todd McFarlane looks hair. Good.
Yeah. Eric is the one who lost all of his hair. But Savage Dragon is also still coming out. And that's the thing. Ashley called it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I truly live for the Dueling Review Savage Dragon episodes. They're my favorite. Now that Invincible is over, I live for them.
300 issues of any book, especially an independent book, is amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you also have to ask yourself, those 300 issues came out over the course of 30 years, which means we're averaging 8 to 9 issues a year. What might we have gotten had there been a heavy duty editor person saying, okay, here's what we need, or here's some changes, or maybe let's cut some of this dialogue down. Let's make this into an arc that makes sense, or, you know, doing the things that editors do, even just a subtle editing hand, I feel like could have made these six issues into 3 really strong ones. And then made the first 50 issues of Spawn into an epic 20 issue run. And the total 300 issues of Spawn, I think, is a really strong 100 issues worth of content. And, you know, I know that that sounds really douchey and dismissive, and I don't mean it like that, because there are good things here. You know, my Spawn story is this. I bought 2 issues of Spawn, number one, because I was young and foolish, and my wife turned around and sold them both. And then she went and bought more issues of Spawn number one by accident. She bought like 9,000 comic books in a box for $20. She sold issue one of Spawn out of it for $25, which meant we'd made $5 profit on one comic book. So I have sold Spawn number one multiple times in my life, and my life is always better for selling Spawn number
one. I bet I still have Spawn number one in my bin if you would like to buy it, Matthew. $25.
I'm not going to give you $25 for a $7 comic.
Why not? You know the movie's coming out, and people are going to want to buy this stuff. Spawn number one. Read it before the movie, and then put your kids through college.
You could legitimately slab one of those and get your money back on it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Sure. But yeah. Here's the thing about Spawn number one that you have to remember. You remember they talked about record level sales, 500, 600,000 copies sold of Spawn number one.
Yeah, they make something big about that in the, what's the Image documentary called, guys?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
Image Revolution.
Yeah, Image Revolution.
There are hundreds of thousands of copies of Spawn number one out there. I have personally sold sets of Spawn 1 through 10, 1 through 25, 1 through 50, at least a dozen times. And every big collection that came into the comic store during the years that I was there inevitably had some of these early issues of Spawn in it, so that you could assemble another set of Spawn 1 through 10. And that's the thing. They always sold, but then they'd always come right back to us, like a boomerang monkey's paw, if you will. And
oh, again, that's the title of Ashley's new comic book that she'll be kickstarting next spring.
Paw. Yeah.
Monkey paws? Hopefully it'll be Aurora and the Eagle : the complete graphic novel.
There you go.
/ monkey paw.
This is the
thing.
That's
the backup written by Jason.
That I really love about this book is it is created with audacity and enthusiasm.
Yes.
And a complete love of comics as a form.
Yeah.
Art form.
If you read any of the Image stuff, the first 2 years of the Image stuff that was coming out, the first 12 issues of anything that these guys were doing, it is just a pure adrenaline rush. Buy this stuff. This is the hip, cool now thing. And you're right. They did change. Image Comics did change how the comics industry worked. And as Ashley said, Matthew said, and I'll even say it, and I've said this about Rob Liefeld, say what you will about him, but that guy's always got a smile on his face. And he doesn't let haters get him down. And it doesn't matter what you're going to say about any of these books. The creators of these books are still going strong and they're still making comics. So you got to give them that respect and you got to appreciate that they're able to carry a company from an infancy into what it is today. And Image is a powerhouse when it comes to publishing.
And that's what I love about Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually think this is a good story. I do think the art is quite great. I mean, look, when the Spawn Humble Bundle came out 3 or 4 months ago, I was like, here I, because I'd never read the first 100 issues, like all in one go, all in order. So I was like, I'm going to try it. And at so many points, I found myself just flipping the pages, looking at the art.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of Spawn is greater than the execution of Spawn. But at the same time, you have to consider that there is something to be said with the, like you guys just said, that of the original Image comics, I would make the argument that this one is the best. Not only for the reason that it is still going 300 issues later when Todd McFarlane's still working on the thing, not only because it's one of the few that got a movie, got a video game, several video games, and a cartoon series. And an action figure line. And when you look at all the other original titles that were put out by the initial Image founders, to me, this is far and away the home run. Now, this is not saying much. I mean, like, this is not a great home run. This is a home run that, like, you know, gets knocked into the outfield and hits the billboard.
Right. It's beating somebody in the head. Triple that got bobbled into a home run because the infielder tripped.
Yeah, it like touched the third baseman's glove and then went into the outfield, so it became a home run.
Are you really making a sports metaphor?
I am sports ball.
That's right.
But And that's a lot of it. Like, I have nostalgic love for Spawn because I do think if done right, a Spawn movie could really work. Mm-hmm. I actually wish Todd would just shut up about it and go make it
and give it to you.
Yeah. No, boy, well, but I wish.
I mean, I think that's part of
the HBO show.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Give it to someone. Give it to someone who's going to do it justice.
But
I don't think Todd's going to want to do that.
But that's the thing about it. That's part of the reason that this endures, even though everybody here is like, man, here are the big giant flaws, but it's still kind of likable. Part of that is Todd's vision. Todd refusing to compromise mm-hmm. or listen or think too much. That sounds mean and terrible. I'm going to take that last one back. But Todd refusing to compromise on the vision that he has for the character is why it's been around for 300 issues. The only other book that comes anywhere close to Spawn is Savage Dragon, which is another OG Image mm-hmm. book. And Dragon is a book that never had the huge audience response, I think.
Yeah.
Spawn was an audience hit. There are several times during those 300 issues where Spawn was a top-level book. Spawn was a draw. People are like, I'm reading Spawn and I love Spawn. Dragon comes out and it's like, yeah, Eric loves making Dragon and I like reading the things that Eric makes. But it's never had that cachet of, oh my God, a new issue of Spawn. And I think that that's important. Even if we look at this and say, this is 1991 in a nutshell, Dan Cortez came and punched me in the face and made me drink a Pepsi Clear and listen to Van Hagar. These are all the things that you get out of this. And, you know, there's a character in this book and his name is Overt Kill. And not only is that grammatically impossible to say, and I speak for a living, ladies and gentlemen, it's a stupid name and I hate him. And I look at this picture of him and I love it.
I looked over it and I'm pretty sure that the character's name is Overkill, but the book's title, like this issue's title, is Overt Kill.
They actually had to change the name of the character during the production of the book.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, he is called Overt Kill going forward, but he was created and solicited and halfway through the book as Overkill. Before they realize, oh my God, we can't do that. It doesn't clear the copy brand search. But I remember that from Wizard Magazine when I was 21.
Yeah.
You know.
So who's in favor of recommending this book to new readers who've never read Spawn?
Define new readers.
Someone who has never read Spawn.
What are their ages?
What are their general proclivities?
I'm going to say I would. So issue 300 is coming up. Start there.
My beautiful teenage daughter would not get a recommendation of Spawn. However, her cousin, who's 22 and a young man from Kansas who really digs the Avengers movies and is totally into Rick and Morty, would get a recommendation for this. So I think that I hate to throw the word dude bro, but if modern, you know, the modern stories that you enjoy that are clearly drawn from the original Image Comics revolution appeal to you, if you, you know, have something that you're like, I really want to see some cool explosions and pretty girls and guys with big pointy armor, and I want it to be all like, pew, 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 then this is definitely the book for you. And I feel like it's fascinating to look at, even if you don't like the art style.
Rodrigo, what about you?
I would definitely, definitely, definitely recommend it from a historical standpoint. Mm. If you want to see what everybody is making fun of as far as comics in the 90s, then picking up this is worthwhile because this is that stuff done earnestly. And the reason why people make fun of it now is because it was hugely successful in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It was everywhere. Everyone was trying to do Spawn. Once Spawn hit, Marvel started trying to do Spawn, you know? So, this is an important moment in comics. As far as are you going to actually enjoy reading it, I think only a few people will. I think if you did enjoy the Spawn movie, you'll probably go back and enjoy some of this. I think if you have been reading some Spawn recently and you want to go back and see how it all started, then you will enjoy this. But you know, this book breaks all the rules. It breaks all the art rules, it breaks all the dialogue rules, it breaks all the story rules, and most of the time lands on its face because of it, except when it pulls off a triple axel.
Mm-hmm. Ashley, what about you?
I would recommend this book. I have recommended this book, but I made a joke earlier about 14-year-old boys, and that is generally the demographic that I recommend this to, or people who have, in broad strokes, those same sort of sensibilities. If you are an adult who still thinks Squee and Johnny and the Homicidal Maniac are the best comics ever written, you're going to dig Spawn, no matter how old you are. and you know that this is one of those things where a good comic store employee will ask you what you like, and they will be able to point you towards something accordingly. Mm-hmm. I also think there is something to be said if you like Capullo art. If you liked his run on Batman, this is worth going back and revisiting. It's pretty easy to tell when he takes over. It's also, I thought it was much later in this run, but it's not. I also think if you are interested in making your own comics, I think it is really worth going and revisiting the OG Image stuff and seeing what they did and seeing what you can take away from that, because they did it in a big, bad way. You know, whether or not all of it holds up is an argument to have. So I think Spawn is valuable, but to very specific audiences.
Mm-hmm. And Jason?
Oh, man, Ashley stole my point.
No,
she's so awesome.
Sorry.
It's all good. I was going to say that. I would only recommend this to people that want to create comic books or love Spawn already. I think this is not a great comic book to give to somebody. But I think if you are interested in creating comic books, yeah, you need to see, this is Todd McFarlane's pure enthusiasm about making comics. Now, he doesn't quite know how to write them, mm-hmm. and he's pretty good at drawing, so it sort of gets you through it. And sometimes that's enough. And also, the interesting about Spawn is it shows you that you can't ignore the word balloons, and 90% of the time, the comic book's still going to read. Like, you're still going to know what's happening in there. You don't need the gobbledygook of the exposition. So I think you can see, I don't know whether it's in this volume or one of the hardcover collections. I remember they show you the sketch where Todd McFarlane drew Spawn in high school. And I think it's evident when you read these five issues that he had been thinking about this book for a long time. So if you have that idea out there that you're really thinking about, how do I express this? I think Spawn is a good idea to be like, oh, this is one way of just pouring your enthusiasm out on the page.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to buy my number one for $25, I'll sell it to you.
I will,
providing I can find it.
Shipping for it, but I won't buy it.
No. All right. Well, Jason, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show this week.
Thank you for having me. I always love Major Spoilers is one of the first comic book podcasts that I ever listened to. Woo-hoo. When I was delivering automotive paint in Oklahoma. So I find it an absolute honor to now be on the show every once in a while and join you fellas.
And tell everyone once more the title of your book and when it comes out so they can go pre-order it on Amazon right now.
It is called Super Soldiers. It is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere you can buy books. It comes out June 18th, but please pre-order it. And I hope you love it as much as I do, because it's a very personal book about comic book superheroes in the military and Spawn's in it.
That's right. And remember, Jason has that deal that's going on. If you send him a receipt to what email?
That is jasoninmanauthor@gmail.com.
Then he will get you a couple of chapters for free for that. You can also follow Jason at JAWIIN on the Twitter. You can follow Ashley at Ashley V. Robinson, Matthew at Mighty King Cobra, Rodrigo at Fearsome Critter, and of course you can follow me at Major Spoilers for all of our shenanigans. And I think that's going to wrap it up for this issue. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
As always, we love your feedback. We want to hear from you. So use the comment section at majorspoilers.com to share your thoughts and reactions to this and every episode.
Or even better, send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com.
And don't forget, you can support the show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
We will be back next week. Next week, we're going to be talking about, another Image comic, Savage Dragon. Why? Because we know that you love comics. We do too. We will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.